Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 104 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that's a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me as always is my lovely hostess, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
You know, I must have eaten something that was a bit spoiled, or maybe I got sick or something, because I had a really bad weekend, because, I think it was Saturday. I had this really intense hallucination that the entire country lost its goddamn mind. And, it lasted all weekend, and now I'm just kind of here hungover wondering what the hell happened.
I think the whole damn country lost its mind.
Yeah, it's kind of starting to look that way. And I've got no banter here. And even though this is the topic and it's relevant, and you're probably going to get me worked up, so get the bleep button ready. But right now it's like, man, I don't want to talk about this. just bring me rum and chocolate and episodes of My Little Pony Stat, because this is unreal.
I mean, it is absolutely unreal. And of course, what we're talking about, and hopefully, again, since we pre-record this, hopefully it's just that it was all just a blip on the radar, though I'm not getting that feeling. I don't know about you, but yeah, there are protests, and there are violent protests everywhere. There was some looting and burning of cop cars and massive arrests in Boston last night. Minnesota's been having them quite heavily. I'm trying to remember. Atlanta, Georgia had some pretty bad events. Oddball's actually been sharing some information in Nashville. So yeah,
they burned down something historic in Nashville. Mm-hmm. They vandalized several national monuments in D.C. They were attempting to storm the gates of the White House Saturday night, and a good thing the Capitol Police stopped them, because if they had gotten onto the lawn, I have 100% certainty that the Secret Service would have come out with the automatic weapons, and there would have been a lot of dead people. But just the amount of absolute
fury
on display, I have not been this angry since 9/11. And so there are two things. I'm going to climb on my hobby horse. There are two things I want to point out. First of all, you called them a protest. Some of them were protests, but
stuff.
A lot of them were riots.
Absolutely.
And here's the difference. A protest is when you oppose something political. A riot is when you loot and destroy for the pleasure of it. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a time, I think it was, I don't remember, it's all a blur. Okay. A police station or two were burned down. Now, part of me twitched at that, because, okay, there's all the evidence that's gone and all the paperwork that's gone, and some really bad guys might not get punished. I don't specifically like it, but I go, you know what? I understand. It's a legitimate target, in as much as if you look at the police versus the protesters as opposite sides of an army, the enemy's base is a legitimate target. I understand that. But there are rules to war, and one of the things you don't do is you do not target civilians. Mm-hmm. And so the moment you start torching businesses, looting, when you attack people for defending their livelihoods, no fudge, you're a criminal. And it gets me so mad. Because, see, here's part of the problem. In Minnesota, they are a duty to retreat state. And so, all right, if you're a target, if you're a big corporate corporation, you know what I mean, you have insurance out the wazoo. But if you are a mom and pop situation, if you bought a franchise, if you're like the retired black firefighter who poured his life savings into a sports bar, then people are attacking your livelihood, your ability to pay the bills, to feed your family, and that's wrong. That is as much an attack on your family as if they had pulled the gun on them, because you because they are affecting your ability to feed them. That is wrong. That is so wrong, and it gets me so upset. But the thing is, because Minnesota is a duty to retreat state, you have these small business owners who are going, well, now I have to choose. Do I potentially go to jail because I defended my livelihood, or do I let them let it all burn down because most of these businesses cannot afford riot insurance? I don't know the technical term, but it's really expensive. And so that is just a hell of a choice. And it pisses me off. There was one guy who was like a pawn store owner. He did shoot somebody who was trying to loot or destroy his business, and he was arrested for murder. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. So if you end up being on a jury in Minnesota, I want you to know this. There's a concept known as jury nullification. Don't tell the lawyers you know about this if you end up being selected for jury duty. Jury nullification simply means this. You are on the jury. The evidence is presented. And yes, according to the law, that person is guilty. The thing is, though, you're on a jury. You don't have to follow the evidence. You could say, screw you, this isn't a crime. That's jury nullification. So, you know, if someone is busted for smoking pot and you think it shouldn't be illegal to smoke pot, but if you can convince everyone else in the jury not to convict them, you have nullified that jury because you have nullified that law. So if you are in Minnesota and you end up on this trial, you can say, yeah, according to the law, he's guilty. But you know what? Doing what he did isn't illegal. Screw you, not guilty. So that's one of the things. It's I'm okay with protests. I'm not okay with looting. And we started off on the side of the protesters because we saw that Floyd, it sure looked like murder to me. And so we're on the side of the protesters. And then someone, and I don't know who, that is obvious that there's something funny going around because you don't have them all kick off simultaneously in different cities across the country. You don't have pallets of strategically placed bricks just by accident. There's someone there. I'm hearing from some people that it's Soros, and it could be. I'm hearing from other people that it might be the police. It could be. I don't know. I do know that if we find out whoever's doing it, they need to be fudged to death with a steel cactus because, oh, they pissed me off. So here's the thing. We were on the side of the protesters, and then the protests turned to riots for whatever reason. And then all of a sudden, the police look like the good guys again. And, you know, there's looting and burning and violence. And then I saw the video of, it was filmed in a suburban neighborhood. They were on their porch. And you may have seen it. There was a National Guard Humvee, and then a bunch of cops in blue riot gear. Okay, they looked like cops. I don't know. For all I know, they could be National Guard or someone else, but they were wearing the blue and they had the face shields and they looked like it. And they started to yell at the people, get inside, get inside. And when they didn't get inside, they very clearly said, light them up. And they shot at them with pepper balls. And then once again, the cops are the bad guys. And at this point, I'm obviously really, really upset. And I don't know who is to blame, but I can tell you there are assholes on both sides, and they need to be punished. And at this point, I'm thinking it's time to bring back public executions, because they're both making me upset. And of course, I'm catching it from both sides, because I'm not firmly supporting one or another. It's apparently very freaking radical to be in the middle. And so I posted this on my public figure page, and I observed that it's funny, because we are told that we need more moderates in the world, apparently because, you know, the extremists are too extreme. We need more people in the center. But in actuality, both sides hate moderates because we don't validate their own positions. Moderates are like hot lesbians, and the extremists are all straight dudes who think they're the ones to turn us around and get us to love their dick. But when we say that we're, you know, no thanks, we're gay, we're just not interested in your dick, they get mad and loudly exclaim that no one wants to screw an ugly dyke like us anyway. So yeah, I'm taking flack from both sides because I'm apparently not being extreme enough, because apparently being middle of the road and rational is a freak extremist position. What the hell? And then finally, okay, I discovered something very interesting about myself. Because some of the things that were destroyed this weekend. Well, first of all, they vandalized a lot of national monuments, and that is reprehensible. But there were museums that were torched. And what I discovered about myself is that I realized that, and this is not a blanket thing, but in general, I think I value knowledge more than I value people. And I don't know how I feel about this. Because you see, when you destroy history, when you destroy a museum, there are parts that are lost forever. And people destroying knowledge makes me furious. Because it's not just censorship, but it's erasure of history, of cultural knowledge. Some of the things we've lost will never come back. And so I actually came to the point where I realized I would rather the rioters die than set fire to the museums and things like that. And I'm not sure how I feel about realizing that, but it just, it makes me so angry that this is our history. I mean, for crying out loud, ISIS or Al-Qaeda or whoever the fuck they were called, they, I don't remember how many years ago, but there were priceless monuments, like of the Babylonian era,
yeah,
that they destroyed because they weren't Muslim. It's like, it's your cultural heritage and you're destroying it, you assholes. Don't you understand that you're hurting yourself? And that's exactly what's going on. And, you know, if you zoom out far enough, you know, okay, I would pick people. It's like, yes, there's a meteor that's going to hit Washington, D.C. We can save all the people or we can save all the art and history. Okay, yes, we save the people. But when it comes down to, well, we can save the history or we can kill the person with the firebomb, kill him. Kill him. It's probably not right, but that's how I feel right now. I am really, truly upset by all of this. And I don't know how we're going to fix this. I don't know if it's fixable. I don't know if this is the beginning of the second American Civil War. All I know is somebody's got to pay. And I don't know if they're ever going to pay. And I'm just furious, and I'm about to lose my voice. So, Weird, take it away and see if you can make me look like a less horrible person.
Well, I mean, first up, I will say the other day I was out in the neighborhood playing with my daughter, and she found a robin's egg. And we were talking about all the parts of the robin's egg, and she was wondering, there's a robin's egg on the sidewalk. Does that mean that there's, you know, a baby bird somewhere on the sidewalk? No, the baby bird hatched and the mama threw the egg out. And you could see that that's the end that the baby bird climbed out of. And they have the eggs have an air pocket that the baby bird breeds in, all complicated stuff. And all of this is instinct. The mama bird doesn't teach the baby bird how to break out of the egg. The baby bird just knows how to break out of the egg. And the baby birds that develop and don't know how to break out of the egg don't get any further than that and don't pass their genes on. It's all instinct. And humans are not like that. Human babies are worthless. They make loud noises and they eat and they get bigger and they learn. That's the only real thing that we're good at as a species. And the whole business of Einstein was a genius discovering the theory of relativity, but it was all of these previous, you know, astronomers and physicists and mathematicians that went back for thousands of years before Einstein that we're going for. I mean, Einstein learned as a kid the Pythagorean theorem because Pythagoras figured that out. And Pythagoras probably had some help to figure that out with some people that were before him. And it just goes back and back. So the idea of destroying history and destroying knowledge absolutely is a horrifying thing because we aren't lions and tigers and bears. We aren't a great white shark. We aren't the things that are pure instinct and genetic perfection as far as all of their abilities, their natural, innate, animalistic abilities. We don't really have that. We're not particularly strong creatures. We're definitely not fast creatures. We don't have sharp claws. We don't have armor. We're not super duper tough, you know, compared to anything. I was watching a video of people hunting wild pigs, and it's like, can you imagine a person taking that kind of damage and still running 250 yards into scrub brush to bunker down? It's just, we just don't reach that level. But we're the ones in a Jeep with a gun and night vision goggles chasing down the pigs. So we win. And the people that are have the guns and have the Jeep and have the night vision goggles couldn't build any of those things on their own. They are working on the knowledge of other people. And we do stuff like go on YouTube to fix our cars because there's knowledge, you know, other people are sharing their knowledge and we're learning. And so yeah, I'm rambling, but you are 100% correct on that idea of destroying, especially artifacts, you know, pieces of human history, because there is stuff that we're always discovering. We develop new technology. We discover, you know, an MRI that's for, you know, human medical stuff, but we can X-ray a mummy that we preserved and did not crack open like we did on some of the earlier mummies that immediately started deteriorating. And so now we can look back thousands of years and see somebody that was preserved after death, you know, back during the Egyptian antiquity. Just very, very interesting stuff. And so not all of it can be preserved with photographs and documentation and textbooks and stuff that are off-site. And so I'm with you on that. And I'm also with you on the whole back and forth on this, because I mean, the death of George Floyd, I honestly have not seen anything like that on the most of these cases. I pulled it up just to mention it is before this, everyone seemed to be talking about the death of Ahmaud Arbery and in Georgia. And mm-hmm. That's really all I'm going to say on his case, because his case, the more I look into it, the more I go, you know what? I don't even want to talk about this. Like, that is a case where I've got sympathies for both sides and I've got admonishments for both sides. And I just hope both sides have good lawyers and the courts do their best, because that looks like a whole unruly mess. And mm-hmm. and the more information that comes out is going through, and there are people that I respect who are on both sides of the, oh, the shooter was in the right. Oh, it was murder. And that's all I'm going to talk about on it, because my opinion is I'm going to leave it the hell alone. This case, the more I see, like, just the other day, an additional cell phone footage from the other side of the police cruiser, where now instead of just the one officer kneeling on George Floyd's neck, it was one officer kneeling on George Floyd's neck and two other officers on his back and legs holding him down. And that went from, this is a, at best, manslaughter, it just complete negligent, just humanity on the, there is no reason why anybody should be treating a cuffed suspect. I don't care what George Floyd was doing leading up to this. He could have been, I mean, he was a big dude. I get it. He could have been attacking officers and hitting officers, but at this point in time, he's on the ground, he's handcuffed, and he is the definition of compliant. And even if he was lying, he could have gotten up, and there's not damn much he could have done, even if he was just fooling and he was gonna kill himself some cops after it was done. Yeah, not handcuffed and proned out with two other dudes on your back. So there's no reason for you to have your damn knee on his carotid artery like it was, because that's how you kill someone. And that's exactly what happened. And so this was a horrible case. I am glad to hear that the officer that is in the photographs that we all see with his knee on his neck has been charged with, I believe, both manslaughter and murder, which I'm very pleased to. Yeah, he was charged with third degree murder and second degree manslaughter. So that is good, because that means it's not going to be like some of these cases where they go for the moon and put on a super duper trumped up charge and the person isn't guilty of that charge. They may be guilty of other crimes, but you didn't indict him on those crimes. And that's how our legal system works. So it looks like this guy's got a pretty tough chance of not going to prison for what he did. And there's still talk on pending on the other officers that were there also receiving additional charges. And I 100% support that. This should not have happened. And again, and I support the people that are protesting. And Aaron, you're also 100% correct on that. There's protesting and there's rioting and there's looting. and protesting. You show up, you make your point known, you show force, you show solidarity, you get together and mourn and express that. I mean, I was at the last large protest I was at was against Mara Healey's assault weapons ban. And a bunch of us all got together and we were angry and we were upset and we showed ourselves. And in the end, it didn't amount to anything, but the fact that we were there, it was documented by the news, and we made our presence known. That is power in its, the moment you start setting stuff on fire and burning things and destroying stuff. And it's so stupid. I mean, David was talking, I can't remember if he was talking on in the Facebook group or at a different channel, but he was talking about how Uncle Hugo's was burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just saying it's not the good guys who burn books. Obviously making mm-hmm. references to the Nazis and their book burning, and the Soviets also did book burning, and Fahrenheit, you know, 451, it's all, you know, bad stuff. But I pointed out the fact that they're not burning books. They're burning prosperity. Like mm-hmm. they destroyed a business. And again, added on to the fact that we've just been down a lockdown. One of my big fears is when all this crap opens up and we're done with the, you know, cause even the phased opening up, there's some places that are doing much better, but that you may not be able to dine, you know, six people to a table or go sit shoulder to shoulder in a bar or go to a nightclub. There's all sorts of restrictions still going on in most of the United States and most of the world. When this is all done, how many businesses are just not going to survive? I mean, I've talked to a bunch of business owners and they're all hurting. And to add on the fact that now you've been closed for 3 months and not able to conduct business, and now somebody has smashed in all your windows, has torched your place, has gone in and stolen your inventory. Oh God. I mean, there's another angle is in Boston. Oh boy, they were going into all the luxury clothing stores on Newbury Street. Yeah. That's going to show solidarity with George Floyd, stealing yourself a Coach handbag. Good job, you jerks. But also in Minneapolis, they burned down the police station. All right. I have heard, and this is stuff I have heard. This is not as well documented as the death of George Floyd, but I've heard a lot of additional complaints against this police department, and mm-hmm. that they have done a whole bunch of excessive force and rough things. And there was talk on the officer that killed George Floyd. There was talk that he was being brought up on charges for excessive force, or I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was brought up on charges for misconduct. And it was actually Amy Klobuchar that said, you know what, we're going to decline to prosecute him. And that's been talked about a bunch because she's one of the people that allegedly Joe Biden is contemplating for VP pick. So there's a lot of potential dirt in this police department. This might be one of those really bad police departments out there, and they are there. I am not anti-cop, but police are human beings. And they can be corrupted. And sometimes when an agency starts getting real, real bad, even the good guys start becoming the bad guys within it just because it's institutionalized. I grew up in Maine. I'm not a Maine driver anymore. I'm a Massachusetts driver. Massachusetts drivers drive awful. And it's because I am not going to drive politely in this state because I'll be the only one and I'll be run roughshod over. But even if the police are that corrupt and that bad, when you burn down the police station, you're not burning down their home base. You're not hurting the police department. You're hurting yourself. You're hurting your community because you're not just going to get rid of the police. Corrupt police is bad, but what's worse than corrupt police is just sheer anarchy where there is no police. You think it's going to do better with just gangs patrolling your streets? Ugh.
Plus, there's the fact that your tax dollars paid for it, so when it's rebuilt, your tax dollars will pay for it again.
Yeah. And even places like Target, the Target that got burned down and the AutoZone that got burned down. Yeah, they're massive international corporations. They've got stores everywhere. You don't think they're also hurting from all of this? You don't think that this just massive recession is causing them to contemplate stuff? There's a good chance that that when this all opens up, or even before everything all opens up, that some of the targets in this country are just going to be shuttered. They're just going to say, look, this was the lower performing targets in the country. We are hurting a whole lot of money. Everybody, here's your pink slips. Maybe some of the higher up managements might get options to relocate to another target somewhere else. But overall, thanks guys for all your hard work. We don't need you anymore. Well, when a target gets burned down, how hard of a decision would it be to just pocket the insurance money and not rebuild?
Mm-hmm.
So now, congratulations, your neighborhood's not going to have a target. And I'm not a huge fan of Target. They're an anti-gun corporation and all that. But even I still occasionally darken the doors of a Target because it is a very, very convenient store to have around. And I'm begrudging to say I am grateful to have some near my house. And now you people might not because you burned it down. One more thing to talk about, a slight tangent on this angle is, my neighbor who is fairly liberal and your more typical middle of the road, moderate Massachusetts resident was definitely talking to me about what it might take to get a gun permit because she saw what was going on and was like, yeah, it's getting kind of scary. And this is just another angle where I don't want to be see I told you show. So that is rude and doesn't win you any friends and adversaries. So I'm not saying it as a see I told you so. But what I am saying is that for those of you who are gun owners and listening, this is the thing to tell people when they're like, oh, why do you have all these guns? Well, because maybe sometime there might be a global pandemic where all the stores get shuttered and all the ammo gets bought out and the police aren't renewing permits and all of this stuff is going down and supply chains are disrupted and suddenly there's massive riots and civil unrest. And you don't have any guns and there's no way for you to get them. So better to have guns and lots of guns when you don't need them than need guns and realize you can't get them. And that's always what I've said to people. It's the old carrying a condom. Better to have a condom in your wallet and never have the opportunity to use it than suddenly have the opportunity to bed somebody and realize you don't have protection and I might have to risk getting an STD, getting pregnancy, all that stuff. Just carry the damn condom. It's better than regret. And the same thing with having a gun is that why do you need that gun? I don't need that. But hey, guess what? There are absolutely times in everybody's life where they might need a gun. There are situations that happen all the time where somebody needs a gun. That is the absolute right tool for the job right then and right now. And when that time comes, if you don't already have a gun, you're not going to be able to get your hands on one. If this all blows over, and I hope it does, that's the thing to talk about is once things recover is, all you people that were scared and concerned about things might want to think about getting a gun. And hey, guess what? You know somebody nice who knows about guns and has a shooting range or has access to that. And I will take you under my wing and I will help you get into guns so that when this happens again, number one, they don't have to be scared. And number two, you don't have to worry about friends and family and people like that. Like if these neighbors, they decide to come over and bunker down, congratulations. There's Weird Beard who knows his guns, my wife who nominally knows guns, and these neighbors who are adult-sized people and could be capable of shouldering a rifle, but I don't know if I would trust them with one because they are entirely untrained and unvetted. So always good to gain more allies, both in the political theater and in the event of things going sideways.
Well, sometimes you need a condom, and sometimes you need a range safety officer. But what do you do if it's an impromptu gathering and there's no range safety officer? Well, as the experienced gun owner of the group, you might become that range safety officer. David is here to tell us what is needed in order to perform emergency range safety officer duty.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. This segment was inspired by a question posed by Super Van Zander on the ACP Facebook page. Zander's question was as follows. When you have that new firearm and get permission to use a relative or friend's back 40 as a range, you might find yourself becoming the RSO by default without any experience, as said person or their friend relative asks to try the gun out. What advice do y'all have for ensuring everyone is safe and fun and staying responsible? Great question. Thanks for asking, Xander. As an NRA-certified RSO, I obviously have a lot to say on this subject, but I'll try and keep this segment somewhat focused. First, just in case anyone isn't familiar with the term, RSO stands for Range Safety Officer. This is the person responsible for making sure everyone on the range has fun in a safe manner. Now, on with the guidelines and suggestions. If possible, come up with a safety brief for new shooters. Start with a review of the four rules of gun safety. Treat every gun as if it's loaded. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target. Always keep the muzzle pointed in a safe direction, i.e. downrange. Be aware of your target and what's beyond that target. Speaking of targets, make sure any target is positioned properly for safety along the entire likely path of the bullet. A proper backstop is a must. Also, make sure no one wanders downrange for any reason while firearms are being handled. Obviously, proper safety equipment should be available for all shooters. At a minimum, this needs to include eye and ear protection. A brimmed hat, like a boonie or cowboy hat, can be useful in keeping hot brass off the skin. Low-cut shirts and open-toed shoes should be strongly discouraged while shooting. Another thing that should be discouraged while shooting is eating, drinking, especially alcoholic beverages, and smoking or vaping. Those activities are all good ways to transfer powder residue to your mouth. Save them for after the shooting is done for the day. If possible, limit the number of people handling firearms at the same time. Ideally, no more than one if most people there are inexperienced. Rotate them through so everyone gets a turn and no one has to wait too long. Another element that can increase safety and speed up rotations is to limit the number of rounds fired. For example, even if the magazine can hold 15 or more rounds, have them only load 5 rounds for each shooter's first time on the firing line. On a related note, no firearm or ammunition handling should occur except by the person or people about to shoot or the RSO. When they're ready, explain stance, grip, sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger control at a minimum. If they seem to be comfortable with those, also add in breathing control and follow through. Don't rush through this and be patient with them. Remind them, if they have a problem, they should keep their muzzle pointed downrange and immediately raise their non-shooting hand. If this happens, the acting RSO should approach them on their weak hand side and immediately but politely take control of the firearm and determine the issue. Another important element for new shooters is to be aware of common range commands. Some of the range commands used by RSOs include load, meaning load the magazine or cylinder but don't chamber around, load and make ready, or make ready, make the gun ready to fire, magazine in, round chambered, or cylinder closed, fire, or fire when ready, obviously that's commence shooting, range is still hot, which is used if someone starts to do something while a loaded gun is being handled, and range is cold, confirming that everyone has put the guns down and no one is doing anything firearm related. Probably the most important command is ceasefire. Explain this command can be used by anyone at any time if they see something unsafe occur. If this command is used, anyone handling a firearm immediately makes the gun safe, preferably including unloading the firearm and leaving the action open, if they're familiar with that process. Regardless, they should then step back from the firing line. Once the situation is resolved, the shooter should wait for the appropriate command from the RSO, or acting RSO, before resuming fire. In addition to taking the NRA Range Safety Officer course, you can also check the range rules at an established range for more ideas. Once all the shooting is done and the guns are secured, encourage everyone to wash their hands and face with soap and cold water to remove any powder residue. Speaking of post-shooting cleanup, always leave the shooting location at least as clean as it was on arrival. Pick up any trash, targets, and other debris. To help with recovering spent brass, lay down a tarp in the ejection path. After shooting and cleanup are done is also a good time to review everyone's experience and get tips for the next range trip. As Oddball Weird and I all mentioned during the Centennial Roundtable, this is serious business. You can keep things light to help reduce stress, but the time for jokes and goofing around is after the guns are psychically secured. Sorry, Xander, but this should probably include puns as well. Weird. Tugli, kuha, telth, shelf, ang, telth, benna, batme, wo, kapa. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. To find our Facebook page, just type ass in the search bar. You'll find us. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
One thing, add on to one point that David made, not only should you refrain from eating and drinking while you're in the midst of shooting, but also make sure don't keep your food and beverages on the firing line either. I remember seeing some people shooting with their coffee cup just sitting there right beside the muzzle of their rifle while they're shooting. And I'm like, you're not going to drink that, are you? Because you're just spraying muzzle gases into that. And that's no good. I mean, you'll hear sometimes people talking about the dangers of lead, such as, you know, the berms of shooting ranges and overall elemental lead. I've definitely seen a lot of data that says it's really not that big of a deal. But definitely the aerosolized lead that is coming out of the muzzle of your gun, both from the heat vaporizing the lead on the bullet and also some of the compounds that might be in the primers and all that, are definitely stuff that are biologically active and things that you do not want to ingest.
Well, by that logic, shouldn't you wear an N95 mask when you shoot to keep from inhaling the lead?
You know, it's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. I mean, the idea is if it's in a well-ventilated area, it's probably not going to be too bad. I mean, certainly you would want to I've seen some shooting ranges where they just, like indoor ranges that don't have proper ventilation, and it looks like a nightclub in the 80s with just the smoke hanging in the air. Though, again, also, I shot at one in Fort Myers, Florida. I forgot the name of the place, but my father-in-law took me out to the range there, and that place, you couldn't even smell the gunpowder. Like, their ventilation was that damn good. Also, I love David's observation that you can find us by typing ass into the Facebook search. That is actually exactly what I do to go to the group when I want to post something or see what's going on.
Oh, jeez. All right, so as the resident sci-fi nerd, not to say Weird isn't, but I think I out nerd him and out geek him in most areas. Yes, that was indeed Klingon that David was speaking, and you know, we're not certain, but we're pretty sure it means Weird, do not dishonor your house. Put my list in the show list for the glory of the Empire. Success.
I was when I was putting the music on that at the beginning and just cleaning up the audio a little bit, my daughter came down to my office. She heard him say that. And she goes, "What did he say? Play that again, Daddy." We might have listened to that about 8 times.
It was really well done. In my head, I was hearing the Klingon theme. And for people who don't know, a snippet of it, the most famous part is dun 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 dun. It's very catchy.
So I've been working on this Fisk for a few weeks now. Turns out it's become even more topical. This week I Fisk Giffords as they lobby against ghost guns. So I'd like to start this Fisk off with a bit of a conspiracy theory. Michael Bloomberg had an ill-fated run for president. Its duration really could be measured in weeks. Why? Well, because just about everybody hates him. Republicans hate him. Democrats hate him. Progressives hate him. Democratic socialists hate him. Women hate him. Minorities hate him. But most of all, gun owners hate him. Because he is the number one threat to the Second Amendment. And actually, I would argue he is the sole threat to the Second Amendment. This can be a problem because whenever he made a move against the Second Amendment, if we mentioned that The Bill is sponsored by Michael Bloomberg, or the news article comes from Michael Bloomberg, or the study comes from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Health, we already have a head start in the court of public opinion. Because even that lady with the Elizabeth Warren bumper sticker on her car and a "Nevertheless, she persisted" tattoo hates Michael Bloomberg even more than they hate gun owners. Bloomberg tried to hide this by renaming Mayors Against Illegal Guns Every Town for Gun Safety and forming spin-off groups headed by other people like Moms Demand Action, The Trace, and March for Our Lives. But everybody knows that Bloomberg is cutting the checks and Bloomberg is calling the shots. So what to do? Now this is what I would do if I was an evil billionaire looking to destroy the Second Amendment. You see, gun control isn't very popular. Sure, you can write a poll that gets 60-80% of respondents to say they support gun control. And if you live in an anti-gun deep blue state, you might be able to get 50-60% of the people coming to the polls to vote for a referendum. But in reality, people excited enough to volunteer or donate money for gun control are few and far between. Because of this, when Everytown started showing that it had surpassed the former powerhouse corporate anti-gun lobby, the Brady Campaign, suddenly, the Brady Campaign started seeing its donations dry up. And the once mighty corporate lobby fell on financial tough times. It would appear that America isn't big enough for more than one gun control lobby. But recently, the Brady Campaign had a massive reorg. They changed their name to the mononym Brady, and suddenly are making content again. Same with Americans for Responsible Solutions. Mark Kelly found that he could never get his little lobbying group off the ground while under the shadow of Michael Bloomberg. And every month you heard less and less from them. Until last year when they had a massive reorg and they changed their name to the mononym Giffords. And suddenly they are producing content again. And much of their events are being done in tandem with Everytown. This is all speculation, but I suspect that both groups were losing so much money that they were considering disbanding. And at that point, it wouldn't take that much money for them to be quietly bought out, say, by an anti-gun billionaire. This next Fisk is going to be on a Giffords video on ghost guns, which of course coincides with an Everytown drafted bill in the Senate and a news push from The Trace. So while this is a Giffords video, it sure looks like Michael Bloomberg had a hand in it.
These are some of the parts that make up a gun. A frame, barrel, slide, trigger components, magazine. But back to the frame. Usually that's where this goes. A serial number. If it's manufactured in the US or imported from abroad, it's required. It's the law. Except for guns that completely avoid regulation. And those, they're called ghost guns.
And they're off to a good start. Yep, those are all parts. I guess you could call the receiver a frame. I mean, I don't need to get all clip magazine with them. And yeah, it needs a serial number and a... What? No regulation? What the
frig?
Just because it's homemade, it may not have a serial number, doesn't mean it isn't a gun.
Do it yourself. DIY. You might think of these two. Pinterest. A lamp made out of spoons. But guns? Unlikely.
Unlikely? Unless you own a Glock, a 1911, a CZ-75, an AR-15, an AK, or really any popular firearms platform or derivative thereof. Nobody wants to run a popular gun that is exactly like every other gun. It's boring. Plus, customizing a gun means it will fit you better and operate to your specific needs. So maybe it isn't something you'd think about if you were a Giffords Bloomberg audience that wouldn't know an AR-15 from a Mossberg 590. But for anybody who spent any time in a gun shop, or to people who've never even held a real gun but play a lot of FPS video games, know that guns are a thing to be customized.
Traditional firearms are manufactured by licensed companies and sold from licensed gun dealers. A ghost gun is a firearm manufactured from parts in the home of an unlicensed individual.
David Chipman, former ATF agent turned anti-Second Amendment lobbyist. So there you have it. Just like universal background checks just means private firearm sales are now illegal, ghost gun just means homemade guns. And they want to make it illegal. Because they want to make all guns illegal.
So there are a few ways to start your DIY gun project. The first is to go to a licensed gun seller, buy a receiver, which has a serial number, and then pick out and order the rest of the parts you want. The second way, go to a website, buy a kit like this one, or this one. It ships, you open it, and inside is your brand new 80% receiver.
Of course, for it to be an 80% receiver, there is no way you can assemble it into a gun as it is. So yeah, it isn't quite so simple. Because they also miss my personal favorite way to customize a gun. Buy a complete working gun and swap out the parts the way I want it and keep the factory parts as spares. Or if I ever want to sell it.
An 80% receiver is a receiver that is 80% complete. You get the unfinished part that ATF does not consider a gun yet, and then their directions on how to use your drill and finish this part.
Yep, you'll need to do some milling to complete the gun. He says drill. And while I know some people have built 80% guns with hand drills, really, I hear that a drill press is really the best tool for the job. Oh, and one reason why I haven't made one myself is that you can still mess it up, and then you'll need to buy another 80% receiver.
Anybody can do this.
A ghost gun in the hands of bank robbers. White supremacists charged in Maryland.
The gun used in last week's deadly school shooting in Santa Clarita was a ghost gun.
Law enforcement says they're untraceable.
Okay, so that first bit of anyone can do it, technically yes. But that's like saying anybody can change their oil in their car. Yes, it's an easy thing to do. But no, we all know someone who can't cook pasta, let alone work a strap wrench. Then they have a glut of ghost gun headlines, and then they give just enough information to show that they are bad, but not bad enough to easily track down. And of course, anti-gunners don't have show notes like we do. But one of those cases was the shooting at Saugus High School in Santa Clarita, California, and the killer did use a homemade gun. Of course, the gun allegedly was a 1911 pistol, which means the receiver was metal, not polymer. So really not all that much easier to make than starting with a piece of bar stock rather than a kit. And police say they are untraceable. Not really. Generally, the lower is going to be marked by the manufacturer, and there will be other data. Still, it's not like tracing a serialized gun does police much good anyway, so this is all just an elaborate deception.
When a manufacturer makes a gun, by federal law, that gun has to have a unique serial number.
At least since 1968. Before then, it was just used in higher-end guns and military-issue weapons so they could keep track of it for warranty and maintenance. Older, inexpensive guns wouldn't even have a serial number, and I happen to own several guns that legally don't have a serial number.
A serial number on a gun is a key piece of evidence. It allows them to trace the gun from the manufacturer who built it to the gun dealer who sold it to the person who first bought it.
Now, this is interesting. First up, it's not a key piece of evidence. In places where they have full registries of firearms, police rarely use the database for an investigation. And given that the vast majority of firearms used in crime are in fact modern guns with serial numbers, and we have growing numbers of unsolved murders in this country, the idea that serial numbers help solve crime is nonsense. But what he does detail is how up to the point of private ownership, guns can be traced, which means universal background checks create a de facto gun registry, which again, isn't useful to law enforcement, but is very useful in firearms confiscation, which Giffords is for.
Since 1988, more than 7 million guns have been traced to solve crimes. But without a serial number, ghost guns are untraceable.
At best, this is misleading. The crime ATF traces solve is stolen property. And the nature of this fact shows what a bad statistic it is. Let's take a scenario. There's a break-in in a metropolitan area and a Glock 19 is one of the stolen items. The gun owner doesn't write down the serial number, so they just know that it's a Glock 19, fourth gen. Now, every gun shop in the area will get an ATF bulletin detailing that a fourth gen Glock 19 was stolen. So now every customer who sells or trades a 4th gen Glock 19 will generate an ATF trace from a gun dealer just to make sure that they aren't selling stolen property. So the number of traces to the number of crimes is disproportionate. Also, when a gun is recovered at a crime scene or found in the illegal possession of a felon, the ATF traces it. The crime is solved, but now the police are just trying to tie up loose ends.
Federal authorities say that nearly a third of firearms recovered in California are homemade, unserialized, and untraceable.
The key point being California. To use the John Gilmore quote, the net interprets censorship as damage and routes around it. You ban all the guns, but let the criminals go rampant, you incentivize creativity. Come to think of it, I'm surprised we aren't hearing about ghost guns in Massachusetts.
Oh, and this is California, where ghost guns are illegal. In a video demanding regulations on ghost guns. They didn't think that one through, did they?
It was 1968 when our federal gun laws were written. A lot has changed since then.
Yeah. Namely, this was the start of modern-day gun control. This also coincides with a massive increase in violent crime in America that only really started to drop in the 1990s, which was when the federal assault weapons ban was passed. But also, what was described as gun culture 2.0 was born, and things like widespread concealed carry started happening, and the AR-15 started glutting the market. A lot has changed, and I would argue that there is data that points to gun control being the problem.
And like many other aspects of our laws, they aren't keeping up with the speed of technology.
Maybe I'm thinking about it wrong, but really, this has all been very incremental. There is the whole 3D printed gun scare that the antis are having kittens over. But I remember seeing ads for CNC mills in Guns and Ammo magazine for as long as I can remember. And of course, I have links in the show notes to Royal Nunsuch from Missouri and a documentary on Khyber Pass gunsmiths in Pakistan, where they are making very effective firearms with very basic tools and without the benefit of 80% anything. And we can even go further back to any of the great living museums in our country. If you go to Colonial Williamsburg, you might see somebody making a flintlock musket or a rifle using nothing but hand tools and a coal fire. So really, this is just anti-gunners looking for the next angle of attack against our rights.
In that issue, it creates dangerous loopholes that make it far too easy for criminals to legally make their own guns.
Complete lie. As I said at the start, just because you made a gun and you are not bound by the laws that federal firearms manufacturers are, does not mean you don't have to abide by additional rules that they don't, or that what you just made isn't legally a gun. So yeah, when you make a gun for yourself, it must be for personal use. Much like collecting guns under a Type 03 CNR FFL, the ATF doesn't really define what that means. But for sure, just like buying crates of Mosin-Nagants at wholesale prices and selling all to your buddies for a profit violates the terms of a federal collector's license, you may legally sell a gun you made, but it must be obvious that you made it for your personal use, used it, and had reason to sell it. And certainly building ghost guns and selling them at gun shows and yard sales is a straight-up crime. And it is still a damned gun. So if you're a convicted felon, you can legally buy an 80% receiver. But if you mill it out to 100%, you have now committed a felony. Even if you don't have any other parts or ammunition, you just built a gun for your own personal use, and you cannot legally own a gun. And let's not ignore the elephant in the room. They have been focusing on ghost guns in California, as in a place where making a firearm without a serial number is a felony. So yeah, pass whatever laws you want, antis. Felons don't care.
There's no way to know just how many ghost guns are in circulation. We do know that they're a trend, one that undermines our system, that nullifies our gun laws and our safety.
There is no way to know how many guns are out there. So just being concerned about ghost guns seems a little bit hollow. I don't think they're a trend. I think they provide some very viable options in a world where things like AR-15 and Glock pistols are now really standardized parts. So the idea of completely building a gun 100% to your liking is a very viable market. As for undermining laws, the anti-gun people promise gun laws will stop gun crime. I ask, has murder laws stopped murders? Have drug laws stopped the use of illegal drugs? Did the 18th Amendment stop drinking? No, idiot. Laws punish crimes, not stop them. As for undermining our safety, gun control does that, not guns.
One solution?
Limit the sale of receivers to those that have been completed and marked and serialized.
That would mean that those parts would be required to have a serial number, and sellers would need to conduct a background check.
I just love how simply he states that. Just ban the sale of incomplete receivers. If you're a complete idiot, that might make sense to you. But how on earth would this be done? Go to YouTube and watch how your favorite gun is made. They start with a chunk of metal or a block of plastic, maybe a piece of sheet metal. Are those incomplete receivers we need to ban the sale of? If you can make a slam fire shotgun with just a few pieces of pipe and a welder, maybe even some epoxy if you don't care how long it lasts, is that an unfinished firearms receiver? People have made AR-15 receivers out of plywood. Is Home Depot a gun store now? It seems that they took about as much thought in making up this proposal as they took to say it on the video.
Washington State, California, Connecticut, and New Jersey are the only states with laws aimed at stemming the tide of these untraceable weapons.
And you have been talking about ghost guns in California. So clearly, it didn't work. But the solution is to enact those laws nationally. Great idea!
Changing the legal definition of a firearm would go a long way towards keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them.
Again, people who are prohibited from owning firearms are also prohibited from building or buying firearms. Changing the definition of what a firearm is only affects people who can legally own and use firearms. And it takes us down a slippery slope of how far removed from something that can actually discharge a bullet we're willing to go to declare it a firearm. Heck, an AR-15 receiver doesn't shoot anything until you put an upper on it. Remember, 80% lowers as they stand cannot fire a cartridge, and they can't be assembled into a firearm. Changing the definition to 70% or 60% or even 10% changes nothing but the amount of effort it takes to make the gun go bang.
And that means saving lives.
No. If there's one thing I can say with certainty, it's that gun control does not save lives. Giffords and Bloomberg know that, and they don't care. Because what they do care about is banning guns. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
All right, so Weird, I really loved your little conspiracy thing at the beginning, and I honestly think that could have stood alone. You didn't need to tack it on to another part. You could have just, and I think you should, just separate it out and have it available for people to listen to.
Okay.
Just post it on your blog, because that's really good. And I did like the X-Files music.
Yeah, that was fun. Especially also I found that was somebody had that must have gotten it off a CD or something. I never heard the complete song. And so it's one of those like, there's sections of that I hadn't heard before.
So you may not know this, but popular TV shows release soundtracks. And I do, in fact, remember seeing an X-Files soundtrack in the 90s. And so, yeah, just the little 30 seconds or so that's for the show. No, they actually have people, maybe not all the time, but for a lot of times, they actually compose pieces. And I guess it's a case of, well, here's what I wrote to exemplify this series. And, you know, take whatever bit you think works best. So, yeah, you know, there's an actual 3 minutes, however many seconds, proper X-Files theme.
Yeah. Well, in some instances, I know the theme to the song, to the show Friends, that was originally just a very, very short song that was set up to run the length of however long the opening credits are. But the show became so popular and the song was considered so catchy that they actually paid to get the artist back in the studio and write several additional stanzas to make it a full length pop song. But now we're getting way into the nerd roots weeds.
Oh, don't worry. I can go nerdier. So there was a show that I really liked and it ended very recently. It's called iZombie. Which is a really fun show on CW. It's basically Veronica Mars meets zombies. I used to call it Veronica Zombie. It's really fun. You should watch it. Their opening theme was from a song that already existed. And it was called Stop, I'm Already Dead by Dead Boy and the Elephant Men. I had never heard of them until I watched this show. And so I immediately, oh, hey, this is a thing. I want to listen to it. And yes, I can hear the theme song in that song, but not in order. They chopped that sucker up and moved it around. And so it's like, okay, yeah, I see how you got there, but it's not quite the same thing, is it? So, you know, that's another thing. If they take an already established piece of music, they might just cut it, chop it, rearrange it.
Oh, that's absolutely happening. But now, I mentioned in the intro that this Fisk is now all of a sudden much more topical. Aaron, why might I have said that?
Well, you know, before the unpleasantness kicked off over the weekend, we were going to talk about Giffords and how they had, they didn't hack us. But they did abuse the instructor lookup system for Operation Blazing Sword. And so we got an email from Shannon Flores, who's working with Giffords and Texans for Gun Safety. Yeah, that's my sarcasm font. Safety. And they apparently looked up every single instructor in Texas, farmed their email address, and sent them an email that I'm not going to read because it's too long, and I've already been in a towering rage today. But it was, this was basically the letter version of that one Saturday Night Live sketch where Steve Buscemi, you know, came out and, you know, how are you doing, fellow kids? And really, that's what this was. It was really, you know, how are you doing, fellow gay gun owners? I, too, am a gun owner and a lesbian. Together, we can talk about gun safety and why people shouldn't be buying guns during the COVID epidemic. And it was just, you bastards. Because, you know, this is not your platform. We built this. This is our platform. And so you're misusing us, and you're misusing it in a way that is not in line with our mission. It's the exact opposite. Unfortunately, it looks like what they did is legal, because that was one of the first things I did. I called up the OBS lawyer, and it's like, can we sue? And no, we can't, because it's political speech, and therefore it's protected, and so it's not commercial spam, and so on and so forth. I send out an email to everyone who signed up on Blazing Sword. I apologize, and we're taking actions to prevent this from happening in the future. We're going to try and make things a little harder. I'm not entirely sure how, because I am neither a lawyer nor a
web designer.
Web person, web designer. There's a proper term that I'm kind of blanking on at the moment, but I'm not one of those. So I don't know how it's going to be done, but I've got people who do these things professionally. And so we're going to do something. And hopefully we can prevent this from happening again. But yeah, it was just a, really, you bastards? You don't have enough with Bloomberg's money. You've got to try and poach us? How dare you? So yeah, that was Giffords. That's what we were going to talk about. It was going to be the main topic.
And what we can do is shame them, because the hilarity is, of course, for those that don't know, and come on, where are you? I'm kind of saying it ironically, because I think everyone should know what Operation Blazing Sword is. But essentially, it is a group that allows people to look up people in their area. And by the way, speaking of area, one of the people that that I see in the OBS Facebook group that said that they got this mailer was from Texas, Australia. And so we are international. So just because you're not in America does not mean that you might not be able to find yourself an OBS instructor. But the idea is, you can say, I live in Massachusetts. Well, let me look up my area, and you might find a certain Weirdington Elizabeth Beard that might be willing to take you to the range, and also here in Massachusetts, help you walk through the very convoluted process of actually getting a permit so you can actually walk into a gun shop and actually buy a firearm. It's designed so that people can get their feet wet, understand stuff, and also be safe. I just talked about the what if things start going bad and my neighbors end up coming over here to be safe. They're adults. They're physically capable of shouldering a weapon. They're physically capable of handling a handgun, but I don't know if I would trust them because they've never done it before, and guns are dangerous and serious tools. And so you can actually teach people, give them the basics, and get this. They're not that hard to use. Get them so that they can be safe with a firearm. We are actually a gun safety group. And these people are Texans for, is it Texans for Gun Safety? What are they calling themselves, Aaron?
I think it was Texas Firearm Owners for Gun Safety. Maybe it's Texas Gun Owners for Safety. It worked out to about a 4-letter acronym. I'm sorry, for safety.
But they're calling themselves Gun Safety, and they're affiliated with Giffords, which offer no gun safety. They are abstinence only gun rights groups, as we have taken to say, is
the best way to be safe is to not own guns. Again, don't buy guns during the COVID epidemic, of which anybody sane should say no. If you can get your hands on a firearm, and especially if you can get your hands on some firearms and some training, that is a very good idea, because things were scary. They're getting scarier, and it's just so tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So we can at least shame them, and they're just horrible tactics.
So speaking of shame, because I think we've closed that off and we can go back to the actual Fisk. Is that Igor Volsky? Because it sounds a lot like him.
You know what? You said that to me just before we started the show, and I went and grabbed another Igor Volsky interview and listened to it. And, you know, when you mentioned it, you went, you know, that does sound like Igor Volsky. And because Lord knows I've listened to him a whole lot, because I cut these Fisks. And I listened to the interview, and boy, he's got a certain pattern where he starts out high and then ends on vocal fry. And this guy also has that. And so it might be, though I find it odd that they would, I mean, because they talk about, they introduce David Chipman. They point out him and that he's a former ATF agent and they have all his regalia, but they don't actually talk about who the announcer is. So it might be, but I don't know. And as far as I know, I don't believe he is directly affiliated with Giffords. He just works with them. He has his own gun control group, of which I have completely forgotten about, because I don't think it is not one that is being bankrolled by Bloomberg, as I detailed in my little conspiracy theory.
The other thing I found very weird, no pun intended, is that sometimes he sounded like he was in a studio in front of a microphone and the quality was very good. And then it would switch to him talking again, but now it's very echoey and the microphone is far away. And what the heck is up with that?
I don't know. They're throwing all these weird production stuff. And then it's just so strange. It's just like the statement of the simple solution is to make it illegal to sell incomplete firearms. Yeah, but what does that mean? Like, literally, there are things where you can buy, like, a sheet of plywood and a jigsaw and make yourself an AR-15. or a plywood jigsaw and a screw gun. And ta-da, mm-hmm. AR-15. It's not going to be pretty. It's probably not going to last very long, but it's going to work. Or, again, you can weld a nail to the end of a piece to a pipe cap and then stick that into a larger pipe that happens to be big enough to hold a 12 gauge shell, and ta-da, you've built yourself a shotgun. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be good. And hey, guess what? It's there. And oh, Aaron, you just, that's definitely going into the show notes. You just posted, this was an April Fool's joke from 80% Arms. It is the 0% billet AR-15 lower receiver. It is just the heat-treated aluminum block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for $28.99, you can get a block of 6061 aluminum that you can use to mill out a lower receiver. And yes, it was started as an April Fool's joke, but enough people wanted it that, you know, they kept it around, and you can still buy one. Probably a bunch of people who are just going, this is hilarious, sure, why not,
and they've got them anyway. It's not like they need to special build this. This is literally just how it comes in on the truck, or it might come in on big long beams of it, and they just cut it to length before they feed it into the CNC machines. But yeah,
I mean, it might very well be a case of, wait, people just want to buy the billet, sure, that's almost pure profit.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that is in the show notes for lols, but also for stupidity, because again, they put it up as an April Fool's joke, and it's a hilarious one. But also these just foolishly assigned rules. I mean, especially since I don't think I mentioned this in my Fisk, but the whole 80% lower thing is not like a precise legal definition. There's not really a
number one, a definition of what makes it exactly 80% versus 79% or 81%. That's not really done. It's literally just an industry term that people have come up with just as a means to say that it's mostly done, but we left out several critical steps so that it cannot be legally defined as a gun. Like if you buy an 80% AR-15 lower, you can't attach an upper to it. I don't know if you can put a magazine in it or not. I'm not that big into these. Cause again, I know the moment I start working on one of these, I'm going to screw up and I'm going to break it. I don't do woodwork. I don't change the oil in my car. It's just, I don't think I have the skill to do this, at least without learning the hard way at least once or twice. But you literally cannot put the gun together. It needs to have parts milled out and it needs to have holes drilled in it before it can even become an AR-15 or an AK flat. It still needs to have some holes drilled into it. It still needs to be folded. It needs to be heat treated once it's bent. And only then can you attach all the other guts to it and then load around into it and fire. Before that, there's no way you can discharge a round with that piece of equipment. But it's not legally defined. You might get an 80% Glock lower in one where you need to do a little bit more work, or there's certain parts that are done for you and not done on the other one. It's just something that people do, and I think they submit them to the ATF for approval. Just make sure, can I get a blessing from you that this is not a firearm that I am showing you right now? And there was also that big talk on the people that made the AR-15 lowers, where it had the different colored polymers in it. And mm-hmm. So you would see there was a black polymer and there was a gray polymer, and you could just take a putty knife or a chisel and just cut away. And if you see light colored, scrape it away. If you see dark, don't touch it. And if you do all of that, it would mill it out. And actually the ATF decided that that was a little too much of a firearm to be legally not a firearm. So it's already not a set science as is. So the idea that somehow you could just either change the number around to make it so that, oh, now it's going to be at least 50% or 49% for it to not be a gun, that's already kind of not defined. Like, you can't really necessarily picture that. That would take a lot of trial and error to get there by the different gun makers or the different 80% lower makers to make compliant incomplete lowers. Or you could just say nothing, and then are billets of aluminum or sheets of plywood or sheets of sheet metal, are those now illegal? They're putting a lot of effort in some things and completely no effort in other things. So good on you, Giffords. We're very proud of you.
So to answer your question, an 80% lower does indeed have a drilled out magwell.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
It's just the trigger group that needs to be done.
Sweet.
So yeah, to close out your thoughts, and I've said this before, the free market interprets government as damage and routes around it.
And so, yeah, no matter what you do, you're going to go through. I mean, that's to tie back into Massachusetts. Mara Healy has said she will never list publicly the criteria that she uses to determine whether or not a firearm is or is not a quote unquote assault weapon in Massachusetts, for the express purpose. It's in, I have this in one of my fisks, for the express purpose that if she says what she considers an assault weapon and what people consider is not an assault weapon, people will start building AR-15s or other semi-auto rifles in compliance with her rules that they are not assault weapons. And she does not want that to happen. She just wants there to be no guns. And that's why I hope we take her to the Supreme Court.
Oh, I hope so too. Oh, I am giddy at the prospect that Pink Pistols might be able to write an amicus curiae brief. Oh.
It would be even better if it's not just her, if it's like several of these assault weapons cases on there. So it can be an even broader case on just the Supreme Court rules, and they say no.
and then I'm going to quickly drain my bank account. Oh, there's going to be so many guns I want to buy. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Right. Okay, you know how this normally goes. But I'm going to say that I've got a public figure page on Facebook. And I don't remember what it's called, but, you know, Aaron Paulette, Operation Blazing Sword, something like that. Look for it. And so that way, if you don't want to deal with all my weird sense of humor and my fandoms and talking about My Little Pony and role-playing games and just want to talk about guns and politics, that's where you go. So, you know, you don't have to put up with me to still find out what I'm doing and get to the good stuff.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
Well, I am a towering pillar of incandescent rage. And Weird is far more laid back. Our personality types are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.